Blog Talk Radio.
And will I wonder why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. Michael and I will share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about Michael, or myself, or forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, your co-hosts, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
Happy Thursday. Today is March 16th, 2017. I'm Michelle Pache, filling in for Jeannie, and I'm here today with Dr. Michael Rice. We warmly welcome you to the show, and thank you for choosing to be with us. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. Press 1, and that will put you in the queue to talk with Michael. We encourage you to call in with your comments or questions, allowing you to strengthen your practice of Aramaic forgiveness. So, Michael, hello, welcome. I thought you might be taking the day off today because you were going to do a play date at a museum, I think.
Well, we are, but I was in a place where I could, we actually just came out of the aquarium here in North Carolina on Carolina Island. Carolina Beach, and so I just knew that I'd be able to come out to the car and carry on with the show, so here we are. What's exciting in your world? Thank you for being available,
awesome.
By the way.
Yeah, no, it was a nice surprise. What's new in my world? Well, my husband's coming home from Peru right in about an hour. He'll be landing in Detroit, and so he's going to
hold the space.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that, and let's see. I teach forgiveness in my private practice, and lots of exciting things happening with my clients at different levels. Some people, you know, last weekend I did a breath session for the first time, and they had amazing results, and they said they didn't understand why or how, but they were so happy the next day, and they're like, what's going on? And it was just, like, tickling me, and it was fun, and, you know, then there's breakdowns, and there's people in the sewer, and, you know, and I breathe life back into them the way people have breathed life back into me when I go unconscious. And so I think overall, they're pretty amazing and joyous.
Cool. That's fabulous that you're doing more and more of that. And, of course, as Richard Bach says, we teach best that which we most need to learn. So here we are. Getting to learn it all on a new level.
For sure.
Well, it's interesting that you say that about the people. You know, here I am happy, and yesterday I was in my misery. What happened? And it's interesting how people set themselves up for and perceive energetic experiences to be something other than just energetic experience that can be moved, removed, and worked through. And so it's just interesting to watch how people interpret things through their filters of fear and hostility, pain and trauma, and they really believe that the experience outside of them is the cause of what's going on inside of them. Of course, that's our definition of denial, and have no clue and no idea that when they shift those filters and when they have the effective tools of first century Aramaic forgiveness, they actually remove the energetic dynamics that created the trauma, and there's no reason for it. And it's interesting that you know, in particular said that, because I was going to share something that someone posted on my Facebook page today that just ties in with that. And this is a person that had a traumatic event happen in a relationship in their lives about a year ago. And we had a couple of conversations. This person had done an intensive about 5 or 6 years ago, Why Is This Happening to Me Again intensive. But as far as I know, maintain little involvement in the work, kind of move forward and, you know, just kind of let it go, called me about maybe 9 months, 10 months, 11 months ago, and was very much in trauma over a relationship breakup. And so I created the invitation to step into the worksheet process and the awareness that the experience that she was having was coming from inside of her and that she had the ability to remove that experience. And then after two or three conversations and the indication that, yes, I'm ready to do more work, I'm motivated by my pain, she just disappeared. And I thought that was kind of interesting. And lo and behold, this morning she posts a piece that was written by an author. And I won't necessarily get into the name of the author, but the title of the thing that they're doing, they call The Cure. And I was just shocked as I read what she's now doing with this trauma that she's got going on in her lives, because here's the post she put up from this book. We think that we get over things. We don't get over things. Or we say we get over the measles, but not a broken heart. We need to make that distinction. Things that become part of our experience never become less a part of our experience. How can I say that? The way to get over a life, and you know, I was just like, oh my God, please don't buy into this. This author's words are, the way to get over a life is to die. Like, as though some energetic experience is permanent and unchangeable. Short of that, you must move with it. Let the pain be pain. Not in the hope that it will vanish, but in the faith that it will fit in, find its place in the shape of things, and then not be any less the pain, but true to form, because anything natural has an inherent shape and will flow towards it. As a life is as natural as a leaf, that's what we're looking for, not the end of this thing, but the shape of it. Wisdom is seeing the shape of your life without obliterating or getting over a single instant of it. And, you know, I posted back with shock at, you're actually going to accept somebody's advice that what you have to do is die to get over what's going on if you've been through a trauma, and or that you just, you know, make the trauma part of your life and carry on and live with it. And I guess, I don't know, there was no more to the post than that, but it kind of sounds like it's, well, you just get some coping skills and you just acknowledge this there and you go on. And I bring that up today because the fact is that every experience that every one of us has ever had, every feeling that every one of us has ever gone through, is a reflection of an energetic pattern held within us. It is not a reflection of the events that happen in our lives. Yes, many of those feelings are tied to the events, where the events are a stimulus, but the experience has nothing whatsoever that is permanent to it unless one chooses to make it permanent. And so just the understanding and the recognition that if I'm in the middle of a trauma, it's because there's an energy in me that is traumatic. Now, of course, I'm saying something short of cancel the thought, you know, a building collapses on my head. Well, that's, you know, a pretty significant trauma. But short of that, most of the traumas that people go through never happened except as energetic experiences within their own structures that if they choose to use the tools, they can dissolve. Because while energy is eternal, no form of it is permanent. And when we take on or engage in an energy, whether that energy comes from our genetics and, you know, old genetic traumas come forward at the trauma in a relationship or a situation in life, and we think the situation is the cause, and therefore the cause is unchangeable, and therefore the experience is permanent. And I just, you know, offer that no energetic experience is permanent, and every energetic experience is what it is because of the, and this piece does talk about the shape of it, the shape of the energy, the impact the energy has relative to our field. And if we bring in an energy that does not belong within our field, of course, we experience that as a trauma. And everybody goes through those things, but while the trauma comes to pass, if one has the tools and one chooses to breathe, the trauma, while it comes to pass, doesn't stay. The actual energetic dynamic can be totally, completely, 100% removed from the energy field. So that even a deep traumatic experience, one, and you can kind of tell how much work a person's done around a particular event in their lives, because one can go back to even the deepest traumas, and I'm speaking from experience now, and sort of embrace that memory as an old friend, because they've freed themselves through forgiveness of the traumatic aspect of that event, and it just becomes an event that happened to a being. And the overshadowing energy is that of the active presence of love. And, of course, the whole idea of the forgiveness process, the wake-up sheet, as we teach it, and you can find that wake-up sheet on our website and hundreds of hours of support in learning how to use it at www.whyagain.org. And so you can go to that website, and the upper left-hand corner, the first words on the page are, "Start here." Click the button, and you're now walking into forgiveness land. Here's how forgiveness is done. And so put that tool to work, and literally what in your past was the most dramatically traumatic experience becomes a friend, becomes an experience that when recalled, because the trauma has been removed, you stand as the presence of love, in the presence of love, experiencing the presence of love, because you're finished with that trauma. Now, of course, that doesn't always happen overnight. When you start realizing, you know, if you think about people who've, you know, lost someone in relationship, or, you know, a death, or a breakup of a relationship, you know, how long do you suppose those events have been going on in our bloodline, and how many layers of that type of event need to be faced and undone in order to really, truly embrace that fully in love and dissolve all traumatic aspects. And again, a traumatic energy, I would offer as a definition, is simply an energy that doesn't belong in your field at the moment when you're experiencing something. And those energetic dynamics, again, short of somebody punching you in the nose, cancel the thought, or a building falling on you, again, cancel that. Those energetic experiences come from within us. And all of those energetic dynamics are changeable. I plan to send this show, you know, having read this, I replied with, you know, it really is time to do another intensive and get out of this thing that in order to be finished with the trauma, you have to die. It's like, what an outlook. And that there are ways to work through those things so that, oh, well, there's a memory, and I experienced that memory out of the presence of my being, out of love. And, well, if I had my druthers, I'd have done it differently. I would love to have changed it. And sometimes those things are beyond our control to change. Oftentimes, if we hold and take and use the tools, many, many more things are under our control than we realized, but sometimes they're not. And once one has chosen to forgive, and, you know, they go back to Yeshua and they asked him, how many times do we have to forgive in order to be done with this one? They asked if 7 times was enough. And in Aramaic, he said, no, 77 times 70, which means that one is going to do an infinite amount of work around any given, quote unquote, trauma inside of themselves that comes up in response to an experience. And literally, we can move through life free of trauma. All it takes is one doing one's work. So thank you for the lead into that, Michelle.
Well, I'm glad. You know what, it's reminding me, and Tim, you might remember this conversation. It's going back like 3 years, where I had gone to a substance abuse conference and they were doing some training on how to counsel people in addiction and supporting them in recovery. And, you know, they said some kind of malarkey. And I'm like, whoa, come on now. That was just – and I'm going to actually go research the archives to see if I can – because the topic I don't recall, but I remember raising my hand and saying, you know, very plaintively, an explanation of energy and how that, you know, was counterintuitive to what the guy was saying or whatever. And that, like, at the break, like, people have, like, kind of been talking about me and kind of shunned me. And I think one person even approached me and, oh, no, he raised his hand and gave his counterpoint and said, you know, I don't think she should be in practice. Oh, do you remember me calling you after about that?
Are you talking to Tim there?
No, either of you.
I don't specifically remember that, no.
Oh,
but
okay.
I've had a lot of conversations in the last 3 years.
Sure, no, yeah, yeah, of course, of course. It's just the whole idea, like, as you were speaking, I have a grief seminar coming up for my educating next Tuesday. And the guy who is a national author and speaker presenter in the area of grief is presenting this class, and he's co-authored a book with Louise Hay. And so I'm pretty excited to see, maybe different than what you were reading today as far as grief, divorce, breakup, recovery after, you know, cancer, all kinds of significant grief evoking events, and that what he's going to, you know, recommend for the, you know, treatment or the objectives related to this topic.
Right, right. Well, and to recognize that we as human beings, you know, if you hold a newborn child, you get to experience exactly what a human life is, and that we are, as human beings, when we are functioning as human beings, get to experience life as and out of the active presence of love. That's what we're designed for. And if we lose that connection, if we lose that active presence in us, then what happens is we get to feel based on the generational thoughts based on events in our lives. So it seems that the event causes the feeling. But what really happens is the event occurs. And I remember working with a woman, this goes way back, probably 35 years ago, in South Florida. I had a practice and was working with a woman who was in her early 60s. And her parents were in their 90s. Her father was failing, but the word death was not allowed in the family system. It just was not allowed. And she did a lot of deep one-on-one work with this whole trauma in the family system around death, and was able to go home to her parents, who were in their 90s, and actually address her father's impending death. And, you know, the parents just went berserk. And she just held the space. She had done her work around it, held the space, processed them through it, and they were able to come to a peaceful conversation about, yep, dad's in his mid-90s, and he's pretty frail, and he's not going to be here long, and that's okay. And one of the upshots of her being able to process that and have that experience was, and I remember this so dramatically because it was such a, it was like a high point in her life. At 62 or 63 years of age, for the first time in her life, she heard her father say the words, I love you, because she had the courage to address death. And then when her father ultimately died, she had two younger children, and her mother, the two children, and she were in a circle around her father's bed, holding his hands. From one side, they formed a chain and were there, and she said it was one of the most powerful and one of the most beautiful experiences of her life when her father died. And the next upshot was that her take was that she had a better relationship with her father after he passed than she ever did when he was in his body. In other words, she wasn't so filled with trauma that she lost contact with her father's essence because he didn't have a physical form anymore. So, you know, something that the average person takes as, oh, what a trauma this is, became one of the most beautiful experiences. And it always touches my heart if Julie happens to be around when Julie shares that she was there in the room with both of her parents passing, and just how powerfully sweet and beautiful it was to be there as part of that, rather than carrying all the unresolved energies of death. And then when someone dies, thinking that their pain, their trauma, you know, their tears and their wailing and their gnashing of teeth has to do with this person leaving their body. and recognizing that if one has wailing and gnashing of teeth around death, it's because one has disintegrative energetic patterns from their life experience or from their generations where they haven't dealt with the issue of death. And so they think that their pain and trauma, and in fact, in some cases, people will, you know, the more pain and trauma they have, that just to them says, well, you see how committed, how great a relationship we had? Look at all the pain I've got now that they're gone. And it's like, that's just a total fraud. The correct approach there would be, wow, look at all the pain and trauma that I have never worked out with this person and have never worked out around death. I think I'll go to work so that I can come to peace with this person's passing, and maybe I'll be able, instead of all this ruckus, noise, and pain and trauma in my head, maybe I'll be able to tune in on a subtle level to this person that I cherish so much and actually keep them in my life. So it just transforms everything when we do that process. But it's no easy task when you start thinking about, you know, how many generations do you suppose in each of our bloodlines have unresolved energetic patterns around loss and death and, you know, the poverty that ensued and the trauma that went on in the family and the family fights and, you know, on and on and on go the list. That's what people are experiencing at the breakup of a relationship or at the loss of someone close to them. It's not the actual experience of either the breakup of the relationship or the loss of someone's life. Transforms everything. But of course, if one is locked into their trauma and they believe the trauma has to do with the external experience, of course, that all sounds ridiculous. That's like just silly talk. But talk to anyone who's actually picked up these tools and put them to work in their lives, and it won't be silly talk. Would I rather have it differently? Sure. And it's perhaps not my choice at this point, so what would I do if I realized that I could choose to simply have a human life, whatever somebody, anybody else is doing? Different game. Different game. Dr. Tim, any thoughts on your part, sir?
Yes, many. Oh, good. One of the pieces that I would add to what you're talking about with this energy stuck in the system and from the bloodlines, etc., I would add to that because of the way we're trained, the thoughts that we're trained to think, the patterns of thought that we're trained to expect after somebody leaves or dies or whatever, we can generate by focusing on that with this mind energy device we have that initiates mind energy. I can sit here and generate new energies that don't belong in my system by just focusing on the thoughts. And if I was raised in a family, you know, just to take an example, the opposite of the woman you were talking about, where they never talked about death and she didn't hear her father say, I love you. If you were raised in a family where they accepted death, they talked about it, they said, I love you on a regular basis, then you create a lot less trauma with your thoughts and the energy you pour into thoughts. And you started dipping into, I was going to mention to Michelle that, number one, yes, I have vague memory of that show you were talking about where you reported getting shouted down at the seminar. And the other one is that you did a show within the, I think it was in 2016, might have been 2015, but where you talked about
all of the years, all of the year.
Well, it's been six. I'm losing track of time. But the conversation was about how I construct a container with my thoughts for my grief and my bitterness and my sadness and expectations of what it's going to be like. You were talking about this yesterday with Julie in Oregon about her expectations of going to be missing her dog if and when the dog leaves, etc. So that you talked about how I have built or I've been handed by the generations and by my cultural family conditioning, a container of thought within which I will house all of the pain and sadness and fear and grief that happens when I lose a loved one. And then what happens is, we had a caller come in and said she really loves her grief because it's so cathartic when she has these big grief release cries and she feels so much better after it. And you were talking to her about all she's really done there is she has this enormous container of her thought where she pours all of the energy from little losses and little disappointments and moderate ones and the big ones, and eventually it fills and spills over, and then she dumps it, and then she says, I feel so much better. And in fact, she's done nothing to dismantle the container and the thought structure, which says every time I lose somebody I don't want to lose, or I'm not ready to lose, I'm going to have more grief, I'm going to have more pain, I'm going to have more fear, I'm going to have more sadness. And this work is about dismantling the thought structure, the belief system, as well as the energetic impressions that are contained in the energy system, so that there simply isn't the expectation or the belief that this next event, if it goes outside of what I want or expect, is going to cause me trauma. And, you know, we were talking about this a while back on the internet show, that when I am in life and something occurs and I judge this as wrong or bad or shouldn't be happening, in that moment, I pull myself experientially out of life. In that moment, I'm no longer experiencing what life has to offer me. I'm only then experiencing the result of my resistance to life. And my resistance to life is the thing that creates my experience of anger, fear, sadness, pain, and hurt. And when I have been trained in a thought process that says life should be this way, you should expect that, et cetera, then when life comes along and has a different plan, if I can't stay in life, I create more pain and sadness and hurt, because all I'm experiencing in that moment is my resistance to life. I'm not experiencing life. So that's what I would offer before I get off on too much more of a tangent.
No tangent there. That's just right on target. And you know, the idea of first century Aramaic forgiveness is to show us how to literally shatter the container and be finished with it. So there's nowhere for that energy to be attracted and set up again and again and again. And so one simply creates out of different mindsets, different containers. And so that's right, absolutely on track. I'm with you. I'm glad you brought that up because it's a perfect fit. And I think we'll open the space for anybody who's ready to do another piece of work to realize that we literally inherit these containers. And then, of course, the culture helps to reinforce them, solidify them. And so acquiring a new – and, you know, it just occurs to me, at the same time, the culture teaches us to eat, drink, and live in a way that reinforces those things and disables our ability to be strong enough to let loose of them, to forgive them, to remove them. And so it takes changing, you know, perhaps everything in one's life. And, of course, that's one of the reasons why a lot of people refuse. It's like, well, but, you know, we talked a few months ago about a cartoon that somebody had posted on my Facebook page, and it had this rousing speaker standing in the front of the room and says, and how many people want everything in their lives to change? Now everybody's rah, yeah, jump up and down and rah, rah, rah. And then the next frame is, and how many want to change? Everybody's face is down in the dirt and not a movement from the crowd. And, you know, you got to be willing to change. You got to be willing to do the work to bring about the change. And some people would rather be faithful to the good old family feeling, you know, well, we're supposed to be in trauma and we're supposed to be in pain and we're supposed to be victims. And don't you know, you never want to get better than the family had it. So that's just the way it goes. And, you know, that's all just a big fraud. We're designed to live in literally 24/7, 365, no matter what's happening in our lives, no matter who comes and goes. So we're designed to live in the bliss of a human life, in the ecstasy of every cell in our structures being connected to the active presence of love that is us. Not that we have to go out and find that from somebody else, But if we think that we can get it and we get our love or our disapproval from someone else, then we start to create those containers for pain, and that's when life goes off the rails. And, you know, it seems like each person sooner or later has to come to the point of going, I think I might be willing to change some things. Wow, actually change. Wow. When a thought comes up and prompts me to do this old power person dynamic, you know, what my power person did was puked on me every time I didn't please them. Gee, here I am. Somebody's not pleasing me, so I'm going to puke. To actually change and go, whoa, wait a minute. Why would I want to puke on them just because they're not doing something I want? The only reason is because my power person did. It's the good old family feeling. Wow, I could actually change to go, oh, boy, I would have preferred you'd done differently. You know what? I cherish you anyway. It takes change, and that takes some work, for sure.
Well, Michael, we've got a caller here. We've got area code 905, if you want to say hi.
Awesome. Let's do it. I didn't hear the area code.
905.
On the 905, you're on the air. Give us a name. Where are you calling from? It's just by any chance, Michelle? That's our normal 905 number.
It is Michelle. I can't believe you guessed that right, eh?
Hey there, young lady, eh? You must be a Canadian, one of those Canucks.
Yeah, I'm a crazy Canucky. And doing fabulous. I'm happy. I'm healthy. And as you would say, rocking.
All right. Delighted. So what's on your mind today? How can we? I saw the post on your Facebook page yesterday about your T-shirt project and the brain supporting people with brain injuries, and it's pretty awesome to see what you're doing there.
And I actually have been in contact with another lady that might be able to do a different work for me on my T-shirt. She said I might be able to help you out with your fundraising on that, so I'm waiting
awesome.
To hear back from her. That's awesome. And if you go look out at that Brain Joyously Living page again today, I put more information
right.
on the organic coffee and tea products out there, so you have a little bit more background on the Ganoderma
right.
lacetum mushroom. I think you'd be very interested in that. I'm drinking it, the tea, because I'm a tea drinker.
Uh-huh. Right.
He is drinking the coffee. He loves it. I find my head is so much clearer. It has a great impact on the nervous system. It's got over 2,000 medical reports, but it's great for autism. Anyways, from my own experience, my mind is clear. But something I wanted to share, I'm still doing my worksheets, and I agree. I had lots of traumas, and the worksheets, you go through them, you never know where they're going to take you, and you hit those rough spots during the worksheets, and it's worth hitting those rough spots because you come out so much better and feeling great. I also, in February, we purchased a newer vehicle. It was a 2010 Yukon XL up in Orangeville, and it we were going to visit our grandson at his hockey game from the dealership. We picked up the vehicle. 20 minutes down the road, it broke down. So the month of February, to be honest, we spent driving from Hamilton to Orangeville and breaking down continuously and spending unexpected nights in Toronto and whatnot. But the positive part is we got lots of time with their two daughters and grandson up there, so that was a positive that came from that. I did experience a couple, I'm going to call them what they call the post-non-epileptic seizures, and
right.
I think it was because I was tired, we were doing a lot of running around and stress, because I was having a lot of good time too. But the dealership was causing a lot of stress to me. And then I started to have a lot of dreams.
Whoa. Let's just stop for 1 second there. Remember that the only thing that can cause you stress, remember the video, Getting the Stress You Need, the only thing that can cause you stress are goals you set. Dealership can't cause you stress. Now, the dealership, when you have 100 goals for them, take care of the car, you know, give them what they promise, give you what – But the stress, remember, is always under your control. You are always in charge of and can cancel the goal that creates your stress that overloads your brain. Remember that.
Right.
It's never outside of you.
I think you're going to like this part of it.
Okay, go for it.
Where the dealership people there were morphing into, like, these animals and lunging to attack. And I was, like, in a sand dune, but I like gnomes. Anyways, I had my gnome there, and there was one in particular. He protected me. And then what I ended up doing quietly one day, I sat, I just relaxed my body, and I thought, and I felt every vessel in my body, my nervous system, I listened to it quietly. If I wanted to move a leg, a limb, just to be comfortable, whatever it was. And I started to develop this happy place. It's the best way I could describe it. And you can appreciate my happy place. It was up at Graham's cottage, and Graham was standing in her house coat. She had her coffee and tea, picking her weeds. And there was Mr. and Mrs. Graham standing beside her. And then all of a sudden, my two dolphins, one jumped into Graham's arms and wanted his belly rubbed, and the other one jumped up to my arm, and we were laughing, and my gnome was to the left of me, and he finally sighed because it was like a relief. He knew I was safe. He was at home now, the gentle breeze, the ferns, and I felt I was in a happy, safe place, and nothing could harm me, and I just soaked all that up into my energy. And I gave that vision a name. Yep.
What did you call it?
I called the vision Onpaw Wee Lodge, which you know why. That was
I
the name of the
lodge. I understand that one, yep.
So then,
great.
Afterwards, when I thought of the dealership, I just laughed to myself, and I thought, oh, those guys are such a joke, you know? And I went up there the next day, and I wasn't bothered by anything. And then whenever I felt like anything was coming towards me, I would just say that word on Pi Wheatley Lodge, and it would take me to there, and it would stop things. And I think one day, sometime after, which is unusual for me, I had, like, I'm going to say a headache, but my head was very, very sore, and I couldn't figure out why. And then, I just sat and listened to my body. And then it came to me, it was like I had this halo on my head, not like a angel halo. It was like a surgical halo. And I would have been in one, not that I can remember completely, but when they did the operation. And then I could vision it exactly, this big black strap going around my head and pushing the pressure.
Right.
And I could just feel it and then start seeing it. And then I just let it go. And then I started, and it was sore, and I started to shake. And I just let my body shake for a while, and then I said, Onpaw Wee Lodge. And then I felt fantastic. It's not like I had a headache after normal shakes and seizures. My body wasn't as tense as soon as I said it relaxed. And that vision and everything left my body, and my head felt better. It was
That's right on track. That's handling the internal stresses, and it sounds like, you know, what you did was you were able to let go of the goals that were driving your stress and come back to that quiet place. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Very
so
cool.
I was really, really amazed because that one really came to me out of nowhere, and it was just listening to my body. And then I did some looking up and kind of doing some research, and I think, forget the doctor's first name, but last name was Levy, and it was, I think it was like somatic therapy, but they said that sometimes patients experience shaking, and that's when they're releasing and letting go. And just like we say when we're doing the worksheets, however, some people may cry. You might get very upset, or it gets very difficult when you hit that spot, right? When you're dealing with things. So,
and Michelle, what you just described to me is that with the work that you've done and the skills you've been developing and strengthening your intuition, you got exact and specific directions for how to handle the stress that you didn't need. And that's awesome. That's like, it didn't come from nowhere. Remember step 5B in the worksheet, there's Rukutukutcha, that elemental force in you, she who will undo the effects of your errors and teach you the truth. You just open yourself to receive that information, and that's awesome. That's exactly where this work wants to go, that you open that higher set of faculties in yourself and are able to live out of them 24/7, 365. So nice work.
Right. Well, thank you very much, and I just wanted to share that because it's amazing just to sit quietly and listen to your body, your limbs, from your body internally, everything, and get comfortable. And it's your nervous system, to me. It just tells you, and it takes you to where you want to go naturally.
You got it. That's exactly what the intuitive development intensive that we're going to start tomorrow is about. It's exactly about doing that. And we start out with getting quiet, listening to what's going on in the body, and then advance from there. So you just did the whole thing intuitively, and congratulations. That's pretty fabulous.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. And I have another one that I could share. It goes on, but I'm going to put it into my artwork, and I'm going to share something really quick. I had a wonderful day and get this, I was on the phone, and I called my mom Mummy for the first time that I can remember my whole life. But anyway, Mom and Renee and I went out. I had expressed to Mom I told her that I was doing this and some of these experiences, and I said, now I've got my creativity coming back. So Mom took me out, and Renee, and Mom bought me all the art supplies that I need, from papers to pastels, paints, everything.
Awesome.
So that I could get back into my art. Yes, and I've got a lot of things images and things that I've created, and she just didn't want me to hide that. She said, Michelle, you haven't done that for so many years. So she has provided me with the tools that I can take that up. She got me an easel, everything.
Well, congratulations on doing that piece of work to open that space with your mom. I know that's been a big challenge. So the onward and upward, that's fabulous.
Yes, and I'm not sure if you heard, but I did have a trip planned, a cruise in Bahamas.
Right. No, I didn't know that.
Well, I did. And guess who I'm going with? My daughter.
Tell me. Cool.
So Kate and I are going. I got up for an extended period of time just because of her schedule with school is very busy. So she's thinking, based on school and her schedules, that next February would be a good time. So I'm going to just allow her to plan it. I've given her all the information. What we're going to do is we're going to fly into Fort Lauderdale and be there for 4 or 5 days. And then we've got a two-night cruise over to the Bahamas Island, and we're staying there for 5 days, 4 nights.
Right.
And so I'm looking forward to spending that time with my daughter. I came across it, and the only reason I can do it, I'll be honest, it was a timeshare deal. So I have to go to the meeting in Fort Lauderdale for the morning or an afternoon.
Right. Sure, I understand.
But that's
very cool.
But anyways, that's beside the point. The point is, the fabulous part, I'm going to share this valuable time and awesome, amazing time with my daughter. And she can drive. So, and then on top of it, it's got two bonus trips with it to go to Vegas and Puerto Vallarta and Mexico.
Very cool. Well, congratulations on opening that space with your mom and with your daughter. That's pretty awesome, and you certainly deserve it. You've been doing your work.
And I love I'm going to be down there this summer.
I'm looking forward to you being at Heartland with us.
Yes, I'm coming down, and I'm hoping, not hoping, the next time, the next few times you hear from me, I'm going to say, these are the dates I got booked. Yay!
Cool, yes. Awesome, very cool. Well, I'm going to share with folks so that they know a little bit more about what it is that that you're hearing, and that is that the on Pauley Lodge sounds like maybe some kind of a Native American sort of thing, but actually Michelle is my niece, and my parents had a cottage up in Northern Ontario when we were kids, and somehow or other it came around that we were trying to name the cottage, and what came out of that conversation was, well, you know, Dad's out there working for the money to put this place together. So we ended up coming up with the name of the cottage, which of course was came from Dad's work, was On Pauley Lodge, On Pauley Lodge. So not exactly Native American, but that's the story behind that. And that's what a great name for your sacred and safe space. That's fabulous, Michelle. Congratulations.
Yep. Great memories. Yeah.
For sure. All right. Well, you are such living proof of anybody who chooses to pick up the tools and do their work. It's awesome what you've what you were going through when you first started to do this work and where you've gotten to and the contribution you're giving back to the brain injured after your own brain surgery. I mean, all of it's just miraculous. Miraculous.
Yeah. And it's been so joyful. And actually, even today, I reached out and I've been in touch with an old boss I work for. And he spoke to me on Facebook. He said on Facebook, I remember you. You were very dependable, smart, and a hard worker. Of course I remember you. So anyways, he reached out and he called me today. And we're going to get together for tea or coffee. And that he said he would love to. And that was so great because I had a great relationship with him working. I worked for him. He went to another company. They were having problems. He knew I could fix things. And I was so honored when he called me from his new place of work and he said, can you help me out? Because I need it here. So I fixed and got things going for him at his other company. There was a lot of great respect there. It was awesome talking to him today. And like I said, I am still meeting. I'm picking up and meeting people as I go.
Fabulous.
And my coffee that I have on my Brains Joyously Living, coffees and teas and everything like that, like I said, that's taken off wonderfully. Renee loves the cafe mochas, but again, it's the product that's in there. I drink the green tea and the red teas.
Right.
But take a look at it. I would really welcome you to take a look at that, you and Jeannie, to see what you think.
We'll do it.
Okay, and I give you both a big hug and everybody, and thank you everybody for listening.
All right, Michelle, we appreciate you and accept your hug and return it.
Okay, thank you.
All right, blessings. Take care. Bye-bye. Awesome. Very cool to watch and be part of. And for those who aren't aware of it, I guess it's about 2 years ago, Michelle was having holes drilled in her head as they were doing brain surgery for some pretty serious brain situation. So the work she's done to shift and turn her life around is monumental. And, you know, instead of being in trauma over that, as many people are with this severe situation, done with it, moving on, and supporting other people with brain injuries, creating awesome projects, a T-shirt project for people with epilepsy and brain injuries, going back to the hospital where they did her surgery 2 years later, and uplifting and giving gift bags to the people who are just going into brain surgery. I mean, what you've done, Michelle, is just amazing, and what a blessing, and it's something that we're all capable of, so great work. All right, well, Michelle number one. I guess we've got Michelle number one and Michelle number two now. How is the switchboard doing? Anybody else with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
Yeah, it's last night my friend pulled out a shirt out of my laundry bag, and she's like, what is this, thing one, thing two shirt? Is this yours? And I said, yeah, well, I guess it is, Michelle one, Michelle two. We've got area code 727 on the air. I've got the mic on.
727.
Hey, it's Camille.
Oh, Camille.
Well, hey there, young lady. Good to hear your voice.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Michelle. It's always wonderful to hear you two also.
Nice.
I'm
so
doing, as you know, some remarkable work with Julie's help. Today is our work day, and I'm all excited about that. And every night I submit my processes to Ruka and ask for her, oversight while I go unconscious and try to sleep. As you know, I've been working with what the doctors call nocturia, frequent and urgent urination, all night long, and have had just really unique experiences with it, feeling like I had completely healed it while I was in France last summer, but having to deal with it once again now that I'm back in Florida. And I noticed on the worksheet you have, well, it's not a worksheet exactly. It's your using healing, aging, and disease list. That at the very top you have enthusiasm in the first row, which says shuts down organ with thoughts like what is wrong with me, which of course comes up when I subject this nocturia to reality management worksheets. And
right.
I don't understand the connection between enthusiasm and that thought.
Well, if you look at the chart, and if anybody wants to get a copy of that chart, you can go to whyagain.org, click the first two words on the page, and that'll take you to a list of links. If you just scroll down, you'll find a chart that says the physiological effects of emotional suppression. So the idea, and we explain that chart in the Empowered to Heal workshop. And basically what we look at there is that we all start out, you know, you hold a newborn child, you've got this awesome, sweet, active presence of love. That presence of love is firing in every cell in the structure. The child lives in ecstasy and bliss, literal physical ecstasy and bliss. You know, if its diaper's empty and its stomach's full, that's the child's experience. And then living in, and that's in theos. If you break the word down, in is in. Theos, or enthusiasm, theos is God, in love. So we're designed to live in love. And if we come into a culture that doesn't exactly function that way, and we have a power person who's not functioning as love, then that power person is going to usually tend to be a parent, which means that whatever it is that takes them out of love is genetically present in our structure. And when they fire that pain or trauma that they're in, the tendency is to turn that energy toward the child and draw the child out of enthusiasm, which when that enthusiasm, when living in the presence of love is given up, it tends to become quite painful. And so the loss of ecstasy and bliss tends to become a thought that goes something like, you know, well, up until this moment, I've been in ecstasy and bliss. What's wrong with me? What happened? What took place that this person who is supposed to cherish me and nurture me and take care of me and feed me all of a sudden puked rage all over me, and now I'm in pain? Something's wrong here. And then you'll notice that the next step, once the enthusiasm is shut down, the next step is to go into pain. And you'll notice that, you know, chances are that you were given a line that's pretty much universal in our whole culture, even though I was brought up in Canada and here you are in the States. A lot of us heard the line, if you don't stop that crying, I'll give you something to cry for. Believe me, when the child loses the presence of ecstasy and bliss and trades it in for the puking rage of a power person that resonates the rage in them or fear or sadness or whatever the energy is, that's traumatic. That's an energy that is extremely traumatic. And the thought that tends to come along with it is, what's wrong with me? Something's obviously wrong here, and it tends to get turned inward. So that's the idea of that particular step in the chart, is to recognize that, you know, so doing, if you find that you're not living in enthusiasm, then to do some worksheets around, you know, start looking at that thought. And that's not the exclusive thought. It's each of the thoughts that are given on that chart are just, you know, this tends to be the kind of thing that happens. It doesn't mean that it's got to be exact and specific with that. But if someone's realizing that they're not in enthusiasm and there's pain going on, then starting to look at thoughts like, what's wrong with me? What's going on here? Tends to open the space to look at the deeper energy that's creating the pain. And, of course, applying forgiveness to the pain then allows us to access what the pain is based in and remove it so that one is finished with it. Does that make sense?
Excellent. Yes, I wrote down quite a few triggers that came to mind as you were talking, and I think I see new ways to work with this this condition. I always think of it as you know, a healing symptom rather than a disease, but I still come away with that. What's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? I don't know what's wrong.
Right. And so to be able to, you know, what comes to mind, there's a scene in one of these vampire movies that's kind of cool because, of course, the vampires can't be killed. And this vampire is shot, and you see, you know, graphically the bullets entering the vampire's body. And then the vampire just focuses and kind of ripples their bodies, and the bullets just pop out. You know, it's just like boom, the energy of the – and I think that's a good visualization to use here, that when going back to enthusiasm, when full power comes back into your structure – whatever that traumatic experience is, instead of you have to die, as we started the show, you have to die to be finished with it, that you bring that power and that energy through your structure. And just like those bullets, the trauma just pops out. You're freed of it.
I can do it. I like those
kind
of visualizations.
All right. Well, you've got our support.
Yes, I know. I certainly know it, and I certainly appreciate it. Well, I have something else I want to talk to you about, but I know that I think we're out of time.
Yeah, we're down to about 2 minutes now.
Yeah, so I'll save it and hope to tune in tomorrow.
I was just kind of delighted.
Okay. Fabulous.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Well, we'll look forward to the next time we get to lay eyes on you and say hello in person and hug your sweet face. And beyond that, we're just kind of rocking along. We've actually made one little adjustment. We're down to the point at in intensives here that the codependence to interdependence workshop has two spaces in it, so it's just about full. We do still have space in the intuitive development if anybody wants to play. And, you know, we changed the dates around or the workshops around. We'd originally planned while we're here on the beach in North Carolina to do a 9-day Course in Miracles. And we did that in response to people asking for it. But then once we set it up, it just like there weren't enough people who really wanted to jump on board with that. So we changed it to a 9-day Why Is This Happening to Me Again. And because of the late dates and all, we've decided that we're also going to welcome registration for anybody that wants to do a 4 or 5 day segment of that 9. So one doesn't have to do the whole 9 days in order to come and be part of that intensive, but they can do, you know, we're starting on a Friday night, so they can do Friday night, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and be part of that intensive. So we're here on the beach in Wilmington, North Carolina. We've had a couple of chilly days, but now the temperature's starting to head back up, so we should have a beautiful couple of weeks in front of us. And we look forward to everybody who comes to play on the beach with us. In the meantime, create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Thanks for coming to play with us. Blessings. Pass the show on to somebody else.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and myself, Jeannie Rice, as we present the Aramaic Internal Process of Forgiveness. We are here every Monday through Friday from 1 to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more on Michael or myself or Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.